My name is Catherine Seal, and welcome to Global South, a program that aims to connect the West with what's going on in developing countries around the world. A program with the objective of bringing worlds together through understanding and education. You are currently listening to a deluge of rain falling on the streets of Kisumu, Kenya. An afternoon rain, about 4 p.m. A daily occurrence, it seems, that darkens the skies, send thousands of people running for cover, and floods the streets so fast and furious that it has nowhere to go at times. It can last minutes, and it can last an hour. There's nothing else like it in my mind. I've seen rain come from the distance, bringing downpours so strong it doesn't have time to soak into the earth. It can carry people away in a flash and destroy roads in an instant. It brings thunder. It is thunder. It's life-giving and life-sustaining. It's part of the magic of visiting this incredible country. Welcome back to Global South and part three of a series of interviews that took place prior to August 2017 in Kisumu, Kenya. These particular interviews were initiated by myself to learn about the history and present-day status of Kenya from those that walked the talk, so to speak. I wanted to share these interviews with the people of Salmon Arm as a way to connect us here in the West and those living in the Global South, or so not to be so politically correct, the developing world, especially Kenya. We always hear about various worlds so far away on various news broadcasts or through charitable and global organizations. We hear about famine, disease, terrorism, and extreme cases of poverty. But we don't really hear from the people themselves, their views, their opinions about the topics that matter to them, and that should matter to us in order to change the state of affairs there and in our own world. In this interview, I'm speaking with Cyprino Dewar, who grew up in Kenya, especially around Kisumu on Lake Victoria. Educated both in Nairobi and the United States, she came back to Kenya after attaining her master's degree to give back to her country. She was involved in peacekeeping negotiations for the UN when violence broke out in Sierra Leone some years ago, and today she is the Dean of Strategic Affairs and Economic Development at the Mizzino University in Kenya. She is actively involved at the community level outside her busy schedule, advocating for the youth, especially for the legal rights of girls, and making sure girls stay in school to support themselves outside of marriage. Her opinions on the inequalities of global economics, global trade practices, imbalances on socioeconomic classes, and corruption are invaluable to understanding what I believe to be some of the biggest barriers in keeping Kenya and other developing worlds in a malignant state of poverty. This interview is unedited and takes place in the Acacia Hotel lobby in Kisumu, Kenya. I hope you enjoy. Good morning. This is Catherine Seal from 93.7 FM, Voice of the Shoe Shop, Salmon Arm. We're here with Cyprino. We are at the beautiful Acacia Hotel in downtown Kisumu. It's probably a balmy 25 degrees out at this time, probably be a little bit warmer today. I'm going to introduce you to Cyprino, and I'm going to get her to give me a bit of an introduction as to who she is and what she does in the community. And then we'll sit down and we'll have a bit of a discussion about where Africa came from and where it's going, and more inclusively, a little bit more about Kenya with the elections coming up in August of this year and what that could potentially mean. And we'll talk about a bit about the economy and how we can change things here in Kenya to push Kenya forward into the global market and get them headed in the right direction in regards to finding equality within the economy, within the world. Anyway, so I'm going to hand the mic over to Cyprino, and she will start with a bit of an introduction, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, my name is Cyprino Odwogo, from Kenya. I'm a lecturer at a university in Kenya called Maseno University. I'm a dean of a school called School of Development and Strategic Studies. And I love being Kenyan.
So, Cyprino, you were born and raised in Kenya, and I understand that you did some of your schooling overseas?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Kenya. I did most of my early education in Kenya. I went to Nairobi University, where I studied political science and did a master's in international relations before I went to United States. Syracuse University as a Fulbright scholar. So I'm both educated in Kenya and the United States.
And I know we've had some discussions in the past when I've been traipsing around Kenya over the last couple of times within the last year. I know that you have been involved in some community programs and also with the UN in regards to negotiating with Sierra Leone in their peacekeeping process. Do you think you can add to that or prefer just to kind of leave that out of the interview?
Yeah, well, maybe I'll concentrate more on participating in the community level because that is something that's very core to my heart, trying to give back to the community that made me what I am today. And when I came to be involved with the community, it was because of my desire for many girl children to be able to get education to the level that can actually support them. So I've been mentoring in schools, mostly in girl schools, without really neglecting the boy schools, and just speaking to girls on, you know, the importance of going to school, identifying the challenges that they are likely to face and how to mitigate them. Because of this desire, I'm also a co-founder of an organization called the Credo, the Children's Foundation. And the reason why we founded the Credo is because a lot of children were facing a lot of problems, especially abuse within the community, and also children get involved in certain crimes and really you don't know what to do with them. So the Credo came up with the Credo Foundation. The core thing that we usually do is to support children who are either in problems with the law or children whose rights have been abused. And mostly we provide free legal services to such children, so that when somebody abuses a child from a poor family, mostly the poor families cannot go to court because they can't afford it. And that's where Credo comes in. We give free lawyers that can take up the case and push it to, you know, where it ends, showing that justice is given to the child. And Kenya has also been having challenges with when a child commits a crime, for example, against another child, what are you supposed to do? So again, Credo comes in and provides the legal services that are needed to a child that is in problems with the law. So we've been doing this since 1997, and we go to record for having saved a lot of lives, a lot of children. Through us, we have brought in a lot of bills, even to Parliament, and now they've been passed into law.
Perfect. That's amazing. And, you know, one of the neatest things I find here is we're so inundated with global organizations and NGOs who come in and say they've done great works, but this is an Indigenous organization, and there's many of them in Kenya that are run and functioning and funded by Kenyans. And, you know, once they get up and off the ground and people see the good works that their fellow Kenyans are doing, as you say, donations start coming in. And, you know, they're coming in from everybody. And we got to remember that Kenya has money. It's there, and people do want to help. So that's great. I just want to say to the listeners, I was out here early 2016, and I had met with Supreme at University of Mizzino and in her office, and we got talking about global aid issues, the IMF, and where Africa stands today. We talked about what I call the looting machine, which is virtually every other country outside of Africa that is taking natural resources out of the country. You know, and Africa is not really getting too much in return. And what it does get in return, it sits at the top in regards to government structure, We see a lot of corruption from that, and unfortunately the money that is being made from Africa's natural resources is not being funneled down into the lower income tax brackets. And the one thing that you did say to me, which has always stuck with me, is that, you know, if Africa could somewhat close their doors and start producing for themselves and denied access of these natural resources to the West, such as the United States, that Africa would be a superpower in its own accord. I'm wondering if you would like to comment on that a little bit. And you can make adjustments to that, of course.
Let me start with the last statement. I don't think Africa needs to close its doors, because the way the international system works, it's like body parts. It's interconnected. And one cannot do without the other. But what Africa needs is a fair process where we know that Africa is really endowed with resources. We have some of the best natural resources. If you look at gold, diamonds, if you look at West Africa, there are some countries like Sierra Leone where when it rains, it's like you find diamonds on the ground, literally. And people don't even know clearly what to do with that diamond. And we are saying that it's high time the world recognizes the potential of Africa in terms of the resources that we have. And I keep on saying, I'm wondering why the West cannot come in and train the Africans on how they can process their own diamond, their own gold, their own silver, and turn them into these powerful commodities that can actually bring more money to Africa. Instead, they come here and they demand raw materials, which they carry, they go and process in their own countries. And then those things come back here for Africa to buy and still leave Africa poor. I know the West have always been fair compared to probably the rest of the world. And what we are calling upon right now is that let Africa be recognized as one place where industrialization, serious industrialization, need to start. Because we are so endowed with the so-called raw materials. And we know as long as you sell raw materials, you'll never make enough profit. And if we own these resources, and we could also own the industries that can actually process them, so that Africa becomes an exporter of the final products of its raw material, then I think Africa would be going to the right direction. No country on earth has developed without combining industrialization and, for example, agriculture. But I don't know why the world keeps on thinking that Africa should concentrate more on agriculture and sell the agricultural products as raw materials, and not helping Africa to really try to promote industrialization that would help them to do finished products, which actually is the real source of the income that any country needs for their economy to grow.
Do you have a specific thought as to why Africa has not been helped and engaged in the processing system?
Well, I think it's just a matter of exploitation. Mm-hmm. I think that's why Africa has not been helped, to tell you the truth. And I don't think it is... I won't call it negative exploitation, but I think the West and everybody else are just looking for their own survival. We know that Africa has a lot of the natural moments. We have a great environment. We know that the West has a disadvantage of, for example, weather, and growing agricultural products is not very easy given long summer, long winter, and all that. We understand, so that if Africa were to concentrate on agriculture, yes, we have comparative advantage over the rest of the world. But we are also saying that we've tried to grow our economy through agriculture alone, and it's not working, selling agricultural products as raw materials. Mm-hmm. And so we are asking the West and the rest of the world, not just the West, to start looking at why is Africa not growing as fast as they would, or anybody would want to it to grow. And we are saying one of the things is that agricultural products being sold as raw materials cannot do it. And we are saying Africa also have other resources. It's not just agriculture. And so it is a high time that the West should concentrate on trying to promote industrial sector of the African states so that they can start exporting finished products. That does not mean that we'll not be able to supply the world with the raw materials that they need, mm-hmm. but we need to create a balance in between.
I think balance is a good word, and I'm just thinking that maybe we should go from there and touch a little bit on world trade policies when we talk about tariffs and taxes. And does Africa sit equally on the board when it comes to developing these policies? I mean, I've heard all different sorts of stories, but do you have an answer for that?
Well, I really don't have an answer for that. But what I can say is that when trade policies and trade negotiations are going on, I would say that Africa is usually disadvantaged. And one of the reasons, as far as I'm concerned, is because we are looking at the market. Who has the biggest market has the biggest say in terms of trade. And if you look at the United States and the big population and the kind of wealth that they enjoy, it means that they have a bigger market for whatever the world is producing, whether that product is coming from Africa, from China, from wherever. America is a big market that cannot be overlooked. And that means that they sit on a position of advantage. And that means that they are likely to make certain demands on how trade is taking place, who is selling what, who is selling the raw materials, and who is selling the finished products, and the world will listen. Because if you don't have American market, you know, you are likely not to sell much. And I'm not just saying that it's only United States, but I'm saying that the so-called the developed world, they have an advantage when it comes to trade policies, when it comes to what commodities are supposed to be sold by who is selling the finished products, which is the angle of the industrialization that I was talking about. We understand that mostly these countries, without selling the industrial products, they will be disadvantaged because they hardly have the environment that allows them to produce the raw materials. And so I think where the problem is that most of the trade policies, how much we are trading on, is not dictated by Africa.
Right.
Yeah. If you look at the WTO, for example, if you look at the WTO, they have been trying, you know, to probably support certain policies that would help Africa to rise. But if you look at, you know, the demands of the so-called developed countries, sometimes they even overpower the WTO, you know. And we understand that you have to look at your own interest first before you look at other countries' interests. That is how politics of the nations work. But if the world is really wanting to help Africa to get out of where it is, then we need, again, to create a balance in terms of what policies of trade are we putting there. How are these policies supporting the African products? What is it that we are allowing Africa to sell in the international market? Let me tell you, Kate, when you look at, for example, trade on agricultural products, which Africa is supposed to have comparative advantage over. Most of the farmers in other countries in the Western world, they are supported by their own countries when they are producing. So really the cost of production probably doesn't compare with the cost of production in Africa, because the Western powers are always supporting their farmers in terms of, you know, giving them certain things that may ease the production process. And yet when we go to sell, we are selling in the same market. It doesn't matter who produced at a lower price and who produced at a higher price. And so Africa still doesn't gain as much. Whether you're looking at what they sell in European Union, what they, you know, it doesn't, there's no balance.
No, that's right.
You're currently listening to Global South.